July 6th, 1986. Owensboro, Kentucky. 16-year-old Shannon Green disappears after leaving a residence. Days later, Shannon's mother receives a phone call from someone calling himself Dwayne, who claims that he and Shannon ran away together to get married, and shortly thereafter, an 18-year-old acquaintance of Shannon's named David Dwayne Bell also goes missing. Investigators are eventually provided with a recording in which Dwayne seemingly confesses to Shannon's murder, and while Dwayne's father is accused of covering the whole thing up, no trace of Shannon or Dwayne is ever found. After that, the trail went cold. Hello everyone, and welcome to our latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host Robin Warder, and we're going to be covering two missing persons cases today. The 1986 disappearances of Shannon Green and David Dwayne Bell. The Shannon Green case was originally requested to me about a year and a half ago from a listener named Tara, and since we've recently passed the 35th anniversary of both these disappearances, I thought it would be an ideal time to do an episode about them. But I had no idea that this would turn out to be one of the most bizarre, complex stories I've ever covered. Shannon Green and David Dwayne Bell both vanished within 5 days of each other in Owensboro, Kentucky, but what's unique about this story is that our second missing person has been accused of causing the first missing person's disappearance. On the day Shannon went missing, she was supposedly on her way to visit a family friend named John Rainier, who instantly popped up on the radar as a potential suspect since he was an ex-con who had spent time in prison for murder. However, Rainier would provide investigators with a recording in which David Dwayne Bell seemingly confessed to killing Shannon before Dwayne himself vanished without explanation. There seemed to be two different potential scenarios about what might have happened here. Either John Rainier killed both victims and is attempting to pin Shannon's murder on Dwayne, or Rainier is completely innocent and Dwayne really did kill Shannon, and perhaps Dwayne's own father made his son disappear to cover up his own complicity. What makes this story even more convoluted is that another Owensboro resident named Angie Dickens also went missing during this time period before her body was eventually found, and it's believed that whoever murdered Shannon might have also killed Angie as well. We're essentially going to be covering two unsolved missing persons cases and one unsolved murder and attempting to link them all together, so brace yourself for a pretty wild episode. Anyway, before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which is currently available for download on several platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or review on any of those sites to help spread the word. The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you would like to learn how to support the show, please visit our page at patreon.com/thetrailwentcold. For as little as $1 a month, you can garner access to exclusive rewards, which may include stickers and thank you cards, early access to episodes, and bonus content. So with all that out of the way, let us now start off by exploring the disappearance of Shannon Green. Our story begins in 1986 in Owensboro, Kentucky, a city located in Daviess County which had a population of around 54,000 people at that time. Our first victim is 16-year-old Shannon Rena Green, who lives with her family on West 2nd Street. At approximately 12:30 p.m. on July the 6th, Shannon left her residence and told her mother, Lois Green, that she was going to babysit for a 39-year-old family friend named John Rainier, who lived 2 miles away on Haines Avenue. However, Shannon never returned home that day, and when she failed to resurface by the following afternoon, her mother contacted the Owensboro Police Department to report her missing. A few days later, Lois received a phone call from a man calling himself Dwayne, who told her that he and Shannon had run away together in order to get married before he hung up. This led to speculation that Shannon may have disappeared voluntarily, but her family did not believe this, since she left all of her personal belongings behind. Furthermore, she had a steady boyfriend at the time, whose name was not Dwayne. However, Shannon was acquainted with 18-year-old David Dwayne Bell, who went by his middle name, and he would wind up going missing only 5 days after Shannon did. The last date anyone could confirm having seen Dwayne was July the 11th, the same day his abandoned bicycle was found resting against a fence at his sister's house on East 20th Street. This concerned everyone who knew Dwayne, since he often took very good care of his bike and never left it unattended. It would be over a week before Dwayne's mother contacted the police to officially report him missing, and his father, David Lee Bell, soon moved to Tucson, Arizona with his girlfriend. Investigators wondered if Dwayne had gone to Tucson with his father, but when they spoke to David, he confirmed he had not seen his son since July the 11th. Since Shannon and Dwayne knew each other, and had actually been together at a mutual friend's home the night before Shannon went missing, it seemed likely their disappearances were connected. During the early stages of the investigation, the Owensboro Police Department put most of their focus on John Rainier. Even though Rainier acknowledged that he spoke to Shannon on the phone on the morning of July the 6th, he maintained that she never showed up at his residence that day. Rainier's house was known as a place where young people could hang out and party, but he did not have the best reputation in the community due to a number of previous issues with the law. After being convicted of armed robbery in 1966, Rainier served 19 months in prison before he was paroled, but in November of 1971, both he and an accomplice were charged with the shooting death of a man named John Brainer. The following August, Rainier was convicted of conspiracy to commit murder and received a sentence of life imprisonment, though he eventually wound up being paroled again. However, at the time Shannon and Dwayne went missing, Rainier was awaiting trial for another crime. In November of 1985, he had been indicted on charges of first-degree sodomy after a woman accused him of sexual assault. Rainier was subsequently released on bond, but after standing trial, he wound up being acquitted on August 19, 1986. Due to his criminal history, investigators thought Rainier might have been capable of harming Shannon and Dwayne, though they did not have any evidence to support this. What further complicated the investigation is that another resident of Owensboro had gone missing less than 1 month earlier. During the early morning hours of June the 17th, 1986, 23-year-old Mary Ethel Dickens, who went by the name Angie, had been out at a bar with a pair of friends who drove her back to her place of residence, the Owensboro Motor Inn. The two friends would say that as they were leaving, they saw Angie speaking with two men in an older model car, but this was the last time anyone saw her alive. Since Angie didn't live with anyone, and it wasn't uncommon for her to take off for days at a time, her sister did not report her missing until July the 8th. On October the 2nd, 3.5 months after Angie originally disappeared, a hunter discovered her body just over 2 miles outside of Owensboro in a cornfield on Lower River Road near the Little Hurricane boat ramp. By this point, Angie's body was so decomposed that investigators were unable to determine her exact cause of death, though they definitely believed that she was the victim of foul play and looked into the possibility that her case might be connected to the disappearances of Shannon and Dwayne. The investigation into all three cases would remain at a standstill for the next 2 decades until cold case detectives decided to take a fresh look at them. Even though John Rainier had been found not guilty when he went on trial for first-degree sodomy in 1986, it would be just over 1 year later when another woman accused him of sexual assault, and he was charged with first-degree sodomy again. When he went on trial in February of 1988, Rainier was found guilty of that charge, as well as the charge of being a first-degree persistent felony offender, and he received a sentence of life imprisonment. After serving 13 and a half years, Rainier was paroled in 2001, but in the ensuing years, he seemed anxious to finally reveal everything he knew about these cases, and when he was re-interviewed by investigators, he shared a shocking story. In 1986, he was employed at the same construction company as Dwayne and his father David, and Dwayne often spent time hanging around with Rainier. On July the 9th, 3 days after Shan went missing, Dwayne phoned Rainier and told him they needed to have a private conversation. However, by this point, Rainier was being looked at as a possible suspect in Shannon's case, so he thought that Dwayne might have been wired by the police in order to collect evidence against him. By the time they finally met up, Rainier had decided to wire himself and was secretly tape recording their conversation. According to Rainier, Dwayne asked if he could borrow some money because he needed to get out of town after hurting some girls. As they continued speaking, Dwayne gradually admitted that he had actually killed these victims and buried their bodies in a cornfield. Dwayne never provided any specific details about these crimes, so the following day, Rainier confronted him and demanded that he show him the location of the bodies. That night, Dwayne took Rainier to a remote cornfield located across from the railroad tracks on Griffith Station Road near Kentucky Route 279, where he proceeded to dig up the body of Shannon Green. Dwayne claimed that Shannon came over to his residence to hang out with them on the day she went missing, but they wound up getting into a heated argument, and Dwayne got rough with her. When Shannon fought back, she screamed that she would tell Rainier about what happened and made an attempt to get away, but Dwayne's father David intervened and pinned Shannon's arms to the ground while Dwayne choked her. Dwayne said that his father kept telling him to choke harder until he finally strangled her to death. Afterward, David helped Dwayne bury Shannon's body in the cornfield. Dwayne then proceeded to take Rainier to another cornfield located 2 miles away from the spot Shannon was buried, where he showed him the body of Angie Dickens, which was concealed underneath some corn stalks. Dwayne said that he and Angie had gone to the cornfield to fool around, but things got out of hand and he killed her. During his original conversation with Rainier, Dwayne had also made mention of killing a quote-unquote girl and a kid from Tennessee. While he provided no details about this particular crime, Dwayne pointed towards a ditch near Angie's body and told Rainier the other two victims were buried there. The following evening, which happened to be July the 11th, Rainier phoned David and demanded they meet, and that's when he revealed everything Dwayne had told him and played the tape recording of their conversation. David told Rainier that he needed to find Dwayne and talk to him, but Rainier claimed that he never saw Dwayne again, and David moved to Arizona a short time later. Now, Rainier did not share this information with the police during the early stages of the investigation, though when they questioned him about Shannon's disappearance, he told them they should speak with Dwayne. Rainier admitted that he was actually hoping to kill both Dwayne and David for what they did, but never got the opportunity to do so, since he was being watched so closely by the authorities. On August the 23rd, Rainier decided to give the tape of the recording to a detective he trusted from the Daviess County Sheriff's Office, who subsequently turned it over to the Kentucky State Police. Well, needless to say, Rainier's story came as a complete shock to the current investigators from the Owensboro Police Department, who had never heard this recording, though they did find documentation to show that the Kentucky State Police had transcribed it and performed their own investigation. Unfortunately, they had also improperly filed the tape in their archives, so it was not found again until 2005. But it did contain the recording of a conversation between Rainier and someone who sounded like Dwayne, and it would be authenticated when 9 members of Dwayne's family confirmed it was his voice. Well, in spite of Rainier's obvious credibility issues, the recording seemed to corroborate his story, and after passing a polygraph, investigators started to believe he was telling the truth. Sadly, Shannon's mother Lois had passed away of cancer in 1997, but Rainier agreed to speak with Shannon's surviving aunts to share his story, and they also believed he was being truthful. Investigators now decided to place their focus on Dwayne's father David, who had run into legal problems of his own following his son's disappearance. In July of 1988, David and his girlfriend were arrested in Owensboro and charged with marijuana trafficking, as it turned out they were both involved in an operation to move marijuana from Mexico to Owensboro through Tucson. After serving time in prison, David moved back to Owensboro, though he would return to jail on a parole violation in August of 2005 after being arrested for DUI. David claimed that on July the 11th, 1986, Dwayne seemed very quiet and anxious, and after they got off work, they both went to Dwayne's sister's house on East 20th Street. While conversing in the yard, David asked Dwayne if he had a problem he could help him with. Dwayne replied no, though he asked his father if he could borrow some money. After David gave him $80, he said Dwayne hopped on his bicycle and rode away from the house down an alley, and this was the last time he ever saw him. David did confirm that Rainier phoned him and demanded that they meet up later that evening, where Rainier played him the recording of his conversation with Dwayne. However, David maintained that Rainier did not play the entire tape, only a small snippet in which he heard Dwayne say the words, "I hit Shannon." Afterward, David went searching for Dwayne, but said he was unable to find him. Needless to say, a number of people found it odd that David decided to move to Tucson so soon after his son went missing, but David insisted that he needed to do so for work reasons. At the time, he was not overly concerned with Dwayne's well-being, because after learning about the disappearance of Shannon, he assumed they had just run away together. David also claimed that about a week after he arrived in Tucson, he received a message from his girlfriend's sister, who told him that Dwayne had called her and asked for him. David said he suspected that Rainier had forced Dwayne to make the call in order to lure them someplace together and kill them both. Following the reopening of the investigation, David became uncooperative, and he also refused the police's request to take a polygraph. He did speak to the media on a few occasions, and maintained that Rainier's story was outrageous, and that neither he nor Dwayne had anything to do with Shannon's disappearance or the murder of Angie Dickens. During one interview he gave to the Messenger Inquirer newspaper, David stated, quote, "You can't make me believe my son was capable of killing anybody. He was a good kid," end quote. He openly expressed his belief that Rainier murdered Shannon and subsequently killed Dwayne because he found out about it. In August of 2005, the authorities performed an extensive search of the cornfield on Griffith Station Road, where Rainier claimed that Dwayne had showed him Shannon's body. While the search turned up nothing, investigators have stated that they believe Shannon may have been buried there at some point before her body was moved. While all these events helped generate a lot of new publicity for this story, they failed to bring about a resolution, and David Lee Bell passed away in August of 2015. So after 35 years, the disappearances of Shannon Green and David Dwayne Bell, as well as the murder of Angie Dickens, all continue to remain unsolved. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. Wow. I have to admit that I really had no idea what I was getting myself into when I began working on this, but the word rabbit hole barely even begins to describe it. Technically, this episode is covering a story involving two separate missing people, but the portrayal of David Dwayne Bell has to be handled rather delicately, since there's a lot of ambiguity about whether he was actually an innocent victim or a murderer. What's particularly shocking is that Dwayne was only 18 years old when he disappeared, but if everything John Rainier said about him is true, then he could have been responsible for the murders of up to 4 people, which would technically make him a full-fledged serial killer. That's pretty hard to comprehend, because if you look at Dwayne's photo on the Charlie Project or any other missing persons website, he looks like he's closer to 12 years old than 18. I don't know if he just looked very young for his age, or if there were simply no other existing recent photographs of him taken in the years prior to his disappearance. To be honest, when I first learned about this case, my initial thoughts were that John Rainier murdered Shannon Green and subsequently killed Dwayne and disposed of his body so that he could blame Dwayne for his crime. It's also been reported that Rainier knew the third victim in this case, Angie Dickens, so I wouldn't have been surprised if he killed her too. However, when investigators took a fresh look at the case during the mid-2000s, it sounds like everything Rainier told them checked out, and while his story about secretly tape-recording Dwayne make a confession might sound absurd, this recording turned out to be the real deal. At the very least, it sounds like the authorities now find Rainier's version of events to be more credible than the story provided by Dwayne's father, David Lee Bell, which has its fair share of inconsistencies and holes. If David was complicit, the implication seems to be that he helped Dwayne kill Shannon and cover the whole thing up, and may have subsequently killed his own son and made his body disappear. That's a pretty crazy scenario, so you can see why it might be easier to believe that a convicted murderer and sex offender like Rainier was behind the whole thing. To recap, here's a list of all the known crimes Rainier has committed throughout his life, and quite frankly, he's pretty lucky that he was not in prison at the time Shannon and Dwayne went missing. He served 19 months for armed robbery, and later received a life sentence after being convicted of conspiracy to commit murder and the shooting death of another man. And in July of 1976, Rainier escaped from the Kentucky State Penitentiary after taking a prison employee hostage at knife point, though he was recaptured within 24 hours. I was unable to find when or why Rainier was paroled, but considering that he made an escape attempt while serving a life sentence for murder, it is surprising that he was a free man by 1986. And let's not forget that at the time Shannon went missing, Rainier was out on bond for a sodomy charge and was only a month and a half away from going on trial for that crime. Yes, Rainier was acquitted, but considering that he went on trial for yet another sodomy charge less than 2 years later and was convicted, I have a hard time believing he was innocent the first time around. Given the circumstances, I can certainly understand why Rainier would have seemed like such a promising suspect in Shannon's disappearance. Rainier did get paroled again and placed on the sex offender registry, but there's one more odd postscript to his story. In 2003, Rainier made the news after protesting an adult business and taking photos of the customers as they entered and exited the establishment. Rainier would subsequently post their photos on the website for a watchdog group called Warline, which pushed forward the message that adult businesses and pornography degrade women and encourage sex offenders. In essence, Rainier seemed to be implying that porn and adult entertainment drove him to commit his previous sexual offenses, which I think is pretty much the polar opposite of taking responsibility for one's actions. However, it was during this time period when Rainier finally decided to reveal everything he knew about Shannon's disappearance and even agreed to share the full story with her relatives face to face. It looks like Rainier has managed to stay out of prison these past 2 decades, and he openly told the media that he regrets not coming forward with this information much sooner, so maybe this was an attempt to build some sort of redemption story for himself. Whatever the case, the circumstances of how we got to this point are such a mess that we have to circle back and start at the very beginning. Looking through the newspaper archives, the original media coverage of Shannon's disappearance didn't provide much in the way of details, as you almost get the impression that she simply vanished into thin air, and there's nothing to foreshadow that her case would become as convoluted as it did. John Rainier has been described as a quote-unquote family friend of the Greens, which seems somewhat surprising given his criminal history. The official story is that Shannon told her mother Lois she was going to the Rainier residence to babysit, but that doesn't quite align with the version he has provided. Rainier says that when he spoke to Shannon on the phone that morning, he told her he was going to a barbecue at his mother's place and would not be there. Shannon then told him that she might come by or call back later that night, but for now, she was just going to go out for a while and possibly head over to Dwayne's place. So perhaps this whole babysitting thing was just a false story Shannon fed to her mother, and if what Rainier said is true, this might explain why Shannon went to see Dwayne instead, as it has been reported that the two of them were together at a mutual friend's place the night before. Now, Lois soon received a phone call from someone calling himself Dwayne, who told her that he and Shannon had run away together to get married. But I'm sure everyone can agree that this call was a complete hoax intended to mislead the investigation. None of the sources state the specific date when the call took place, only that it was a few days after Shannon's disappearance. She went missing on July the 6th, while the last confirmed sighting of Dwayne took place on July the 11th, so I'd be curious to know if the call happened before or after Dwayne vanished. It seems obvious that the caller wanted to give off the false impression that both of them were still alive, so the two most likely candidates are John Rainier and David Lee Bell. When he was originally questioned, Rainier did try to point the police towards Duane as a potential suspect, so it makes sense if the caller was him, though being a family friend, I wonder if Lois would have recognized his voice. But it would also make sense if David was the caller, since he said he was not overly concerned about his son's disappearance because he believed the rumors about him running off. Now, this leads to one of the biggest questions in this case. If Rainier made a tape recording of Duane confessing to murder, why did the Owensboro Police Department not find out about it until 2 decades after the fact? Well, Rainier's explanation was that he believed the Owensboro PD were so focused on him as a suspect that they had developed tunnel vision. He later stated during an interview, quote, "No one set out to find what happened to Shannon. They set out to find what I did to Shannon. There's a big difference," end quote. Since Rainier feared the Owensboro PD was going to railroad him, he decided to turn over the recording to a detective he knew with the Daviess County Sheriff's Office because Rainier had apparently dealt with this guy in the past and he was the only law enforcement officer he trusted. But it seems like once the detective gave this tape to the Kentucky State Police, they misfiled it in their archives, and since a number of the original investigators eventually retired or were reassigned, everyone pretty much forgot about the recording until 2005. If they had known about that recording from the very beginning, things might have turned out differently, but in addition to his own paranoia about law enforcement, I'm sure Rainier had his own self-serving reasons for waiting an entire month to hand it over. The tape was logged into evidence on August the 23rd, 1986, 4 days after Rainier was acquitted at his trial for sodomy. I have to wonder if he held onto the recording as a contingency plan in case he was found guilty, as he might have tried to use it as leverage in order to make a deal for himself. And by Rainier's own admission, he considered himself to be an outlaw and seemed to have his own vigilante agenda, as he wanted to kill Duane and David himself as revenge for what they did to Shannon. Questionable motives aside, it sounds like investigators do believe the recording was genuine and that the other voice on the tape does belong to Duane. But the problem is that while Duane definitely confesses to something, he never specifically mentions Shannon. I have not heard the original audio of the recording, but the full transcript of the conversation between Duane and Rainier is available online, and Duane mostly speaks in very vague and brief sentences. As examples, some of his lines include, quote, "I done something the other day. I need to get out of town for a while. Me and her been into it for a while, and I just got pissed off," end quote. Also, quote, "It's worse than that. I mean, I hurt her real bad. Hurt some others, too. I need to get out of town pretty bad," end quote. At no point does Duane ever use Shannon's name or refer to these others by name either. When Rainier asks, quote, "Who all did you hurt?" Duane replies, quote, "It's a girl and a kid." And shortly thereafter, he says, quote, "Nah, there's another girl. I hurt her pretty bad too," end quote. When Rainier pushes him for more details, Duane finally admits, quote, "Because I killed one of, I killed them," end quote. I don't know if he just misspoke or if this was intentional, but it is interesting how he starts this sentence off by saying, quote, "I killed one of," before abruptly switching to, quote, "I killed them," as if he was initially only going to confess to one murder, but then decided to admit he killed multiple victims. It's after this when he tells Rainier that he hid all the bodies in a cornfield, but the recording ends without him providing specifics about anything. While Duane would supposedly share more details about Shannon's death with Rainier at a later time, as well as implicate his own father, none of that was captured on tape. But the lack of details is what makes the recording more believable. Theoretically, if Rainier was the killer, he could have forced Duane to make a confession against his will on tape, but from what I can tell, this recording does come across as a natural conversation in which Rainier is genuinely surprised by what Duane is telling him. Rainier claims that Duane took him into separate cornfields to show him the bodies of Shannon and Angie Dickens, who was presumably the other girl Duane was referring to in the recording, and her body was found in a cornfield months later. According to Rainier, Shannon's body was buried, whereas Angie's body was only concealed by cornstalks, as Duane apparently said that when he originally left the scene, He became paranoid that Angie's body would be spotted by airplanes flying overhead, so he decided to go back and cover her with cornstalks. To recap, Angie originally went missing on June the 17th, 3 weeks before Shannon disappeared, and Dwayne's story is that he and Angie had gone out to this cornfield together to fool around, but he wound up killing her when things escalated out of control. So if this crime wasn't pre-planned, that might explain why Dwayne did not go to the trouble of burying her. There really isn't all that much to go on with Angie's case, but her friends said they last saw her speaking with two men in an older model car after they dropped her off at the Owensboro Motor Inn. I guess this could support Dwayne's story, that he and Angie traveled to the cornfield before he killed her, but since he always rode a bicycle, I'm not sure if Dwayne even drove or had access to an older model car at that time, and I have no idea who the second man could have been. For all we know, perhaps the sighting of the two men is insignificant, and they had no involvement in Angie's death. And then there's the bizarre side story of Dwayne also supposedly killing a girl and a kid. He apparently told Rainier they were from Tennessee, and when asked what he did with their bodies, he pointed over to a ditch located near Angie's body. I'm not sure if any digs or excavations have ever been performed of this particular spot, but we don't even know if these two victims actually existed, and I'd be curious to know if law enforcement has ever tried to match them to any missing women and children from Tennessee. If Dwayne was telling the truth, how exactly did things escalate to the point where he murdered a child? Like I mentioned earlier, Dwayne was only 18 years old at this time, so if he actually murdered and disposed of four separate victims, including a child, he was on track to become one of the worst serial killers of all time. But there is one more detail about Rainier's story, which does seem to have corroboration. Rainier claimed that while they were out in the cornfield, Dwayne told him that he had called the police and confessed to what he did. Well, the Owensboro Police Department's records do contain a handwritten note from one of their sergeants dated July the 6th, 1986, the same day Shannon went missing. While it contains no specific details, it does state that someone called into the police department that day and said, quote, "I've done killed two or three, better stop me before I kill more," end quote. The story goes that Dwayne implicated his father in Shannon's death, as David supposedly held her down while Dwayne strangled her, and he helped him bury her body. I know an extensive search was performed at the cornfield in 2005, and it failed to turn up Shannon's body, but investigators seem to believe that she may have been buried there at some point. If David was involved, perhaps he went back and moved the body to another location after Rainier played him the recording of Dwayne's confession. Since Dwayne was not seen again after David heard the recording, it's been speculated that David could have killed him and disposed of the body in order to cover his tracks. Of course, since David later went to prison for drug trafficking, he's obviously not a saint, but was he the type of person who would have been capable of murdering his own son? After all, John Rainier is the one person in this story whom we know is a convicted murderer, so why should we take his word for it that David was complicit in these crimes? Well, the problem is that the story Rainier provided to the authorities has held up under scrutiny, but David's version of events has inconsistencies. Obviously, the fact that David moved to Arizona so soon after Dwayne went missing is pretty troubling, particularly since he admits that Rainier played the recording of Dwayne's confession to him. David's rationale is that Rainier only played him one snippet of the recording where Dwayne said, "I hit Shannon," so he never actually heard him confess to killing anyone. But the problem is that Dwayne never actually mentioned Shannon's name or said anything like that during the recording, and during a 2005 interview with WFIE Channel 14 News, David said that the tape he heard must have been different than the one police currently have in evidence. As you might recall, David claims that his final conversation with his son took place at Dwayne's sister's house, where he last saw him riding away on his bicycle down an alley. But if this is true, why was Dwayne's bike found at this house leaning against a fence? During that same aforementioned news interview, David attempted to address this by stating, quote, "I don't remember whether he was riding a bike. I know he had one at the time, or walking. I just don't remember that part of it. But I do remember the last time I saw him when he left the yard," end quote. In addition, records show that after the Owensboro Police Department contacted the Tucson Police Department to request assistance with their investigation, a Tucson detective interviewed David on October the 9th, 1986. David reportedly told him that he gave Dwayne some money because he wanted to leave town, and he'd also heard rumors that Dwayne beat up a girl who ripped him off on a drug deal. However, when questioned about this years later, not only did David deny ever saying these things, but he claimed he never even spoke to a Tucson police detective. Now, to be fair, a lot of these inconsistent statements from David were made 2 decades after the fact, so it's possible he has simply forgotten details or misremembered them. I guess it's possible that after learning that his son had been tape recorded confessing to the murder, David could have taken Dwayne to Arizona with him in order to help him hide out. Hell, Tucson is not too far from the border, and we know David was involved in a drug smuggling operation to move marijuana out of Mexico, so perhaps he helped his son escape there to start a new life. But if so, there's been no trace of him at all in 35 years, and I would be curious to know when the last independent eyewitness sighting of Dwayne from anyone else besides David took place. Aside from David's claim that Dwayne left a message with his girlfriend's sister about a week after he moved to Tucson, a story which has never been corroborated, there has not been anything to confirm that David was alive after July the 11th. Another issue with figuring this case out is that we really don't know all that much about Dwayne's background. If he had a history of violence prior to his disappearance, I've never heard about it, and since he's technically a missing person who has never been charged with any crime, I am hesitant to label him a murderer who was responsible for the deaths of multiple people. But at the same time, I cannot overlook that there is actual audio of Dwayne saying the words, "I killed them," followed by him describing how he hid his victims' bodies. As for David, he has since passed away and is no longer around to defend himself, but his alleged involvement is based entirely on the words of John Rainier. And while there are definitely some troubling actions and inconsistent statements from David, there is no actual evidence that he did anything. When David was interviewed by police, he said that he accused Dwayne of accidentally killing Shannon, and this eventually led to a fight between the two of them, in which he accidentally killed Dwayne. So even if David was responsible for his son's disappearance, it might not have been premeditated murder. Even though no one would call John Rainier a great human being, I still get the sense that even if he is not being 100% truthful about everything he says, there still has to be at least some elements of truth to his story. If he really was responsible for what happened to Shannon and Dwayne, then it sounds like he's done a masterful job of fooling investigators. But the fact of the matter is that unless the bodies of Shannon and Dwayne can be found, we will never really be able to get a full handle on what happened here. Let's also not forget that there's an additional victim, Angie Dickens, whose murder might be linked to these disappearances, and she has not received justice either. And to top it all off, there may also be a murdered girl and child from Tennessee who are buried somewhere and are waiting for the remains and identities to be uncovered. Overall, it's a very frustrating, tangled web which has yet to reach a resolution, so if you happen to have any information about the disappearances of Shannon Green or David Dwayne Bell or the murder of Angie Dickens, please contact the Owensboro Police Department at 270-687-8888. That's 270-687-8888. But if you just have your own thoughts about what happened, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email to robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Now the reminder that The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so please visit patreon.com/thetrailwentcold to learn how you can support our podcast and become eligible for some pretty neat rewards. We produced a bunch of exclusive bonus episodes for our patrons in tiers 2 and 3, and this past month, I released an episode about the kidnapping of Jo Lynn Rogers, who happened to be the sister of famous professional wrestler Jake the Snake Roberts, and this episode not only examines the crime itself, but the troubling history of Jo Lynn Rogers' entire family and her upbringing at the hands of an abusive father. And for our patrons in Tier 3, I've also recorded another new audio commentary track, which can be played over a classic episode of Unsolved Mysteries. I'd also like to give a shout out to our most recent listeners who have signed up with us on Patreon this week, and they are Deborah N., Andy W., Cheyenne G., Karen T., Alyssa P., Susan W., Francis Lola B., and Jessica. Thank you all so much for your support. Also, provided that it's safe enough to travel there, The Trail Went Cold is going to be appearing on Podcast Row at the very first CrimeCon UK, which is being held at the Leonardo Royal Hotel and Spa in London on the weekend of September the 25th and 26th. If you would like to purchase tickets to the event, we have a special promo code you can use to get a 10% discount. So to receive 10% off, visit crimecon.co.uk and enter the promo code COLD21. That's COLD21. In addition, I wanted to provide another reminder that I hold live streaming sessions on a platform called Get Vocal. Every Thursday night from 7 until 8 p.m. Eastern Time, I host what is essentially an after-show for each week's podcast episode, where I have an interactive discussion about the featured case from said episode and answer questions and address comments from listeners. I always include a link to these sessions in our show notes, so be sure to check there for more information or visit getvocal.com. That's GETVOKL.com. I just wanted to give another shout out to my supporters at the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. I need to provide a big thanks to Miguel Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. So have yourself a good week and join us next Wednesday for another brand new episode of The Trail Went Cold. We'll be right back.